Hello, I'm Kenny Pasenik-Linden with Radio Free Palmer. Joining me today in the studio is Libertarian Alaska U.S. Senate candidate Mark Fish. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Well, thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
So our general theme to our questions today is how do you work with others? And so giving a bit of background, both nationally and here in Alaska, there seems to have developed a more than usual political polarization resulting in gridlock and decisions made by use of power that isn't always backed by a majority of citizens. So diving into our first question, how do you view the present state of government and how do you work with others of different perspectives, both within and without your party?
Well, my view of our present state of government is our government seems to be failing our people. One of the problems we have is, the civility is lost because we're not following the rules that we set for ourselves in that government. You know, if you have any deliberative body, all should agree on what the rules of order are and then follow those rules. And that's the way that people, that even if they disagree and have very passionate agendas, can still get along and get things done. One of the other things that comes to mind is you have to be able to take defeat. You know, if you're outvoted, if you follow the rules and you're outvoted, you have to accept that and move on to your next strategy. Personally, I have a pretty good record of working with people of all political persuasions. I've worked with the Republicans in some of the campaigns in the past. I was a president of Airport Heights Community Council, which is in a very liberal district, and they voted me as their president because I do appreciate everybody's input and follow the rules that are established. That's the way we keep fairness for everyone. And the worst thing that we can do is try to game the system instead of honoring it by following the established rules that we all consent to.
Do you think your position as a third-party candidate is a helpful position or a hindrance when it comes to either creating those relationships across party lines or coming out as a third party instead of not necessarily one of, obviously, we're very familiar with Republican platforms and Democratic platforms, but do you think is it helpful being a libertarian when people are maybe not so familiar with your position or your politics?
Well, I think it is. Personally, in the campaign, I've been accused of being a shill for Mark Begich and a shill for Joe Miller. But the idea is that libertarians, can be the tie that binds the two polarized parties. There's our Democrats that agree with libertarian principles. There's Republicans that agree with libertarian principles, just not the same all the time. And one thing I can say about libertarians is we're consistent. There's a lot of things that I have a distaste for, but I understand because of libertarian philosophy that we tolerate that and allow people to choose their own paths and have this idea that people have to be convinced, they can't be forced. And I think that's the big difference. Republicans and Democrats alike want to use government to pursue their agenda. Their agendas may be different, but they're similar in the fact that they think that government should be used to pursue it.
Do you think there are rules that are useful or not useful at the moment when it comes to what Congress is able to manage to do, which doesn't seem to be very much at the moment when it comes to things like filibusters and playing the politics of voting? Do you think that is there something that you as a libertarian candidate could bring to the table as a way of releasing that gridlock?
Yeah, well, one of the reasons we have a gridlock is because of the Senate, in my opinion. We have a House that is doing its job and the president that obviously has his agenda. And the Senate is supposed to provide that balance. And what we've seen there in the Senate is they're more interested in dividing up the Treasury than they are in establishing order. And by establishing order, I mean they need to rein in the executive privilege. I mean, we're going into a time if every single president has increased presidential authority. And this is how republics fail. You know, the Senate in Rome gave all that authority to Caesar, and we get emperors that way.
Some people would say that the president needs that authority at the moment to get anything done.
Well, what is going to be done, though? I mean, we have established ways of doing business. And if the rules don't work, there's an established way of changing those rules. We simply can't ignore the rules, throw them out, and come in with our own set of rules. And I think that's what this president has been doing.
All right. Moving on to our second question. Here in Alaska, there has been considerable focus on balancing both resource development of extractive industries with environmental concerns. What are your guiding principles when weighing in on this topic?
Well, I think what's important here is number one is securing property rights and enforcing personal responsibility, and then also providing information. I think these are the things that government can do in order to mitigate any damages. Now, nobody with private property wants to destroy the value. If I own a piece of property, I want to get the maximum use out of that property. And when I'm done with that property, I want to sell it for at least what I got into it and keep my profits. So it's incumbent on people that own property to preserve its value. So in preserving its value is returning it or keeping it in a natural state would be part of that value.
Is it a little bit difficult when it comes to defining value, because different people are going to have a different perspective of what the value of a property is?
Well, there certainly, the market will determine what the values are. And there's intrinsic values that we all have. And I don't think there's anybody out there that goes in the intent of destroying the earth, let's say, or destroying their portion of the earth. Every property owner that buys a piece of property likes to see something come out of it. Now, then we can get back into the personal responsibility side of that coin, too. If, take for instance, the Flint Hills situation, where you had an owner that actually destroyed a piece of value in his property, sold it to another owner, and passing on the liability to the previous owner. And we can't have that. What we need to do is hold people liable for the damage that they do. And unfortunately, the whole corporate structure is centered around making rules that limit their liability so they can hide from their damages. And I think that's what we need to bring back is personal responsibility. You know you're damaging something. You can't pass that off on another party. Once you sell your property, you have to be accountable for that shape that property's in.
Is that the role of departments like the Department of Natural Resources as well as the Environmental Protection Agency?
I would like to see it done in state. I would like more controls in the state because I think they're more accountable if people pay attention to them, and they're closer to the people, so they can pay attention to them. And what I would like to see is, in those cases, the Department of Environmental Conservation should be the lead agency in monitoring and taking care of these things. And it brings the other point, is information. A lot of this neglect and destruction has happened because people don't have the proper information to do what they want to do in a safe and clean manner.
Is it information, or sometimes people would argue that it is profits above environmental concerns, that if there isn't penalties, very severe financial penalties, then a for-profit corporation is going to continue to take the
risk? A libertarian perspective on that is always, convincing is much better than coercion. And once we establish that they have the proper information to do it right, and then they violate that, well, then you can hold them accountable. It's interesting to note the worst polluter that we have in Alaska by far is the federal government. They've got uncapped wells that they're not cleaning up on the petroleum reserve. They've got military bases where we have toxins that were buried.
Are you talking about like Superfund sites?
Yeah, sure. And there's so many that are even undocumented that they're not even looking and cleaning up the land that they control. Yet they spend their resources going out to places like Eagle and going to a mom-and-pop place or mine operation to make sure that they're not muddying already muddy stream.
As a senator, how would you hold the state accountable?
Well, as a senator, first thing you have to do is remove the power from Washington and bring it back to Alaska. And when that happens, the people have a more direct impact on their state government. It's very easy for an Alaskan to walk up and talk to their U.S. senator. We have an advantage there. There's only 700,000 of us or so. That's a small city down in some Senate districts. So we have access to our government that's almost unprecedented anywhere else in the country. And what I would like to see is Alaskans take advantage of that, start working within the state government. And too often that Alaskans are seen as local governments as adversarial instead of partners. And they are the most accountable. We have to pay attention to these House races and these local Senate races and hold our state government accountable too. And that's easier to do than it is to lobby Washington for relief.
How do you mean when you talk about bringing power back to the state? What are concrete steps or the actual steps to take?
I think we have to look a way of taking control of our own resources, certainly on state land. We should not allow the federal government to dictate the terms of our usage of our own property. And the state should control the commons within its borders. There's 60, almost 67% of the land here is in possession of the federal government. That's outside of Utah, that's the highest in the nation. And I think we could do better if we returned some of that land into the control of the state government and use the will of the people to make sure that it's properly utilized for their benefit.
All right, moving on to our third question. Edward J. Snowden's actions have led to a widespread discussion about another balance, this one being between privacy and security. The often overlooked aspect of the Snowden affair is the role of media in reporting about or deferring to government activities. So this is a bit of a two-part question. What are your guiding principles when weighing in on this topic?
Well, my guiding principles on this is the Bill of Rights. There again, we've agreed and consented on established rules that nobody has ever changed, and we need to enforce and adhere to the Bill of Rights. Now, one can argue that the world changed and there are security issues.
Are you specifically referring to things like the Fourth Amendment?
Well, certainly. I could list them all, but the ones that come to mind is number one, and there's the First Amendment. There is a free speech issue. There's implied right to privacy in the Fourth Amendment and security in your possessions. When you're talking about security in general, you have to talk about the Second Amendment and self-defense as well. So there's a lot in the Bill of Rights, and you could go on and list the others too in the Fifth. But these rules were established by a people that just got through a very terrible war on their own country, with all those security issues and problems that we have today. And I think they understood better than we do now that if a government doesn't have the moral authority that it gets from the consent of its population, well, then it is lost. And that's what our government needs to do, is get the faith of the people on their side. And this is what's being lost in it. Now, the media has a very important role to play in that. And outside of property and physical damage, to the interests of the United States or their allies, they should report, everything that's going on. And I'd like to see more investigation. I know resources and media is tough sometimes, but I think investigative reporting is very important. And I actually think Snowden, I don't agree with the way he did it, but I actually think he provided a great service to the country in exposing some of the excesses of our government. Now, on the other hand, folks like Bradley Manning that gave away secrets in a war zone that impacted the lives of soldiers— that's a terrible thing to do. You know, so I think, we do have a balance there. And I kind of would like to trust the media because they're private people and they have conscience and ethics of their own. And I would trust them, on any given story.
We've also
to do the right thing.
We've talked a little bit about corporations already, and when it comes to corporate media as well, that most media aren't little mom and pop establishments anymore.
And they have marching orders.
They have marching orders, right. And the very big conglomerates as well, sometimes right. multinational. So. When it comes to the role of media, is it important obviously we want to have the media as almost that fourth branch of government to really hold the rest in check. Mm-hmm. So how does that happen when we have this idea of what the government says, and especially when it comes to the privacy and security aspect of Snowden with the NSA, how does the media report on these things when, like you had said, that you disagree with how he did it? How is the media supposed to report on these things if we're also protecting security issues at the same time?
Well, obviously it's a balance. But what's to remember about that is, there's a clear and present danger. If there's a clear and present danger, certainly, that's obvious to everyone, and the media has a responsibility not to create that harm.
Is that difficult at the moment to determine what a clear and present danger is when we use that? And obviously, we've found out that the government uses things like social media to really pick up on what even American citizens are doing. So how do they determine what a clear and present danger is?
Well, we're an open source society, our media, our information is flowing, and there's the problem we have now is so massive that what do you select? What do you pick? And I think this through technology, this is emerging. We're coming out with new dynamics all the time. But in that, it's important that we don't lose our perspective on what our goal is. Personally, I believe, it's said that these truths are self-evident, and I believe most truths are self-evident. It's what's clear and obvious, obviously a danger, is in the minds of a reasonable person, is easy to find. Is easy to determine. Now, what about government, about data collection? We're getting very good at it. I worked in the federal government for aviation and when laptops came out to do logbooks. And what we have is now we have the ability to capture information. They just want to capture it all. But they don't necessarily have a way of filtering it or of using it in a good manner. But just in case they develop that, they want to cast a wide net. And I think that's the wrong approach.
Thank you. All right, moving on to our last question, and this one I think is a pretty meaty one. The Supreme Court has recently taken stands that seem to put corporations above individuals. In Alaska, that may be one aspect of the discussion of the role oil companies play in our owner state. How do you view corporations?
Oh, it is a media question. I'm kind of passionate on that myself. It goes back down to the basic foundings of Western society that goes back to the Magna Carta. Corporations are not people. Only individual human beings have rights because they were created by God or nature, if you wish. Corporations are figments of and creation of man. Creations of man cannot have rights. They can have privileges, they can have authorizations or we consent, but they do not have rights. And I think that's a very important point. Only individual human beings have rights. Corporations do not. And I think that's what's getting lost. One of the problems that we're having, too, is this concept that is emerging that never was in our mindset for the last 200 years, a concept is emerging of collective rights. There are no collective rights in any of our founding documents or in any, like I say, it's a recent phenomena of philosophy that seems to be emerging that I find
is this
troubling.
The idea of penumbra of rights, that this idea of from a constitutional law perspective of being able to, the ones that are implied that aren't necessarily exclusively written or written in a really obvious way in the Bill of Rights, that they're implied rights. Is this what you're referring to when you say collective rights?
Well, the only place in the Bill of Rights that I see that is misinterpreted, in my opinion, as a collective right is the 10th Amendment. But if you notice, it doesn't say rights in the 10th Amendment. It says powers. Mm. And powers are given by people who have rights, by consent. And they can be taken by that same consent. You know, so powers, as listed in the 10th Amendment, are not necessarily the same thing, in my opinion, as rights. And if you notice, the Supreme Court has weighed in on the Second Amendment and said it's an individual right because there seemed to be an issue with that. But if you notice, too, all first of the 9 amendments were all about individual rights. And then the 10th Amendment was thrown in there to assure the powers of states. Mm. So it implies that the states have authority, you know, over the central government. And that has been pretty much erased in our current scheme of things. And it needs to come back.
Yeah, and speaking of, current Supreme Court decisions with the Hobby Lobby case, how do you interpret the Hobby Lobby case?
Well, individuals in a corporation have a right to make those determinations, right? The marketplace is done by consent, but I don't agree with the idea that one person in a corporation, because of their religious convictions, can decide for the entire group or the public on what those rights are. Everybody has that individual choice to make. And why we're getting into these problems with these decisions is the idea that government should have any control over your health care in the first place. You know, once we start managing people from a central collective place, we have a series of unintended consequences, as you're seeing now with Obamacare, that requires more and more management. And ultimately, what we get is a system that is so cumbersome that nobody has a handle on it, and it's doomed to collapse. We're much better.
And referring to the Affordable Care Act and what?
Well, yeah, as one, yeah. But regulation in general as well. Mm-hmm. We're much better off letting people control their own destinies in their own hands, and then just providing the information they need to do that in a good way, and the security that they get from knowing that nobody can take that from them.
And some people say with the Hobby Lobby case that from the corporate side of it, that it's a religious freedom. Speaking to the First Amendment, how do you interpret that?
Well, you know, a corporation doesn't have a conscience. Religious freedom is all about conscience. It takes a person to have a conscience, right? We're getting into muddy waters of collective rights, and I, as a libertarian, just reject the idea overall of any rights being collective. We have a right to determine for ourselves what the course of our own action is. And frankly, when we have other people, you know, paying for our choices, well, then we are going to have to accept some restraints on those choices. And frankly, you know, people should be in a position, we should create an environment that people can pay for their own and sustain their own lives without these interferences and rules and regulations that keep them from prospering.
So coming back to an Alaska-specific question,
sure.
When it comes to what's currently on the ballot with Ballot Measure 1, which is referring to Senate Bill 21, with oil taxes and the role of even just in the media at the moment seeing the role of money and corporate money, especially coming from specific oil companies, into the actual media campaign of Proposition 1.
Sure.
What is your perspective when it comes to this, the role of oil companies, as well as pulling into this idea of corporate? Obviously, we've established previous Supreme Court rulings, this idea of corporate personhood and the rights of corporations when it comes to the use of money.
Well, the rights of the corporation when it comes to spending money on campaigns is I view that they can spend their money on what they want. You know, as a small candidate for office before and dealing with APOC and reporting requirements, it just gets too cumbersome. And I think the only thing that we really need is transparency. Let them buy all the media they want, as long as you have access. And the opposition has access to that same media. Let them buy all the media they want. Let them spend their money, as long as people know where it's coming from, and that'll fit in their decision making process.
What's your perspective on Senate Bill 21 itself?
You know, it's not a libertarian. It's not a libertarian bill. Neither was ACES. Neither was ELF. You know, if it was in a libertarian philosophy, what we would have done.
ACES are the laws that are what Senate Bill 21 is referring to.
Yes.
Yeah.
And previous to it. But if it was up to the libertarians, what we should have done in the first place is it's our oil. We put it on the marketplace and sell it for a fair value, basically accepting royalties to it. And then outside of that, there would be no tax structure.
Being we as the state of Alaska?
Since we're an owner state that we have decided to keep those resources in common, you know, yes, we need to. What a libertarians would have done is just sell it as royalties, get the price up front that we needed, and we could move on from there and not deal with these tax schemes. But since that hasn't happened and we are in those schemes, our philosophy is whatever reduces the size of the government most and keeps more of the resources in the public in the private sector is better for the free markets. It's better for Alaskans.
Thank you very much for joining us today, and I'm sure our listeners will be very excited to hear what your perspectives are. And thank you for taking the time to come into the studio.
You're welcome. And if they want to know more about me, it's markfish.us.
Thank you very much.
All right, thank you.